Round one of the 2020 Suncorp Super Netball season is in the books. A massive round of netball, some returning stars, and a few young players stepping up to the National League. We have all the reviews here on the Centre Pass podcast. Hello and welcome to the Centre Pass podcast brought to you by Netball Draft Central. My name is Jared Gardner and as always I'm joined by Taylor Mulkey and Sophie Taylor. And we are excited because the 2020 Suncorp Super Netball season has finally begun. Round one is in the books and Taylor, a massive round of netball up in Brisbane.
Yeah, I think I speak for everyone when I say it was just great to see the Suncorp Super Netball return, and I think it definitely lived up to the hype. There was so much intensity, and although some of the games were a little bit scrappy, we have to take into consideration that most of these teams haven't even had the chance to play a practice match. So to get round one out of the way, done and dusted, I think it's just got me more and more excited for the games to come.
Yeah, definitely. And Sophie, a couple of injured stars returning to the court for the first time in 2020. It was great to see some of the absolute stars of the competition back out on the netball court.
Yeah, absolutely. I was so impressed by, honestly, like the drive and the determination of these players. I mean, you look at someone like Kelsey Brown returning. She only did her ACL in, it was like round 13 last year, towards the end of the year, and she's already back at it midway through this year. And I think that's just insane. And honestly, those players stood up and they were the like quality performers in their teams, and they really proved that, I mean, anyone can get through that injury and still pursue an elite sport.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get into some of those performances a little bit later. First of all, we'll just run through the results from round one really quickly. The first match of the round, the Firebirds 48 were defeated by the Lightning 66. The Firebirds kept up with the Lightning for basically three quarters, but just that last quarter from this great team in the Sunshine Coast Lightning was just too much for a young Firebirds outfit.
Yeah, I don't really think that the scoreboard actually reflects the intensity and the closeness of that game, because for me, what you don't see in that end result is the amount of pressure that the Firebirds put. Like in the opening half, The Lightning were rattled. They didn't know what to do. Their attack was completely and utterly stifled. And I think that's just such a good indication of the defense that the Firebirds have. Clearly, I harp on about them week in, week out. Kim Jenner and Tara Hinchliffe. For me, they're going to be diamonds of the future. And you can just see that combination completely blossoming. And I think that's such an exciting prospect for Australian netball. And it was just a really strong performance from the Firebirds. No one expected it, and for them to then eventually get blown out of the water, it's a really disappointing sign. But yet, like I said, the scoreboard doesn't reflect the actual intensity and closeness of the game as a whole.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the Firebirds deserve a lot more credit than what the scoreboard reflects. I mean, they were so damaging in that first quarter, and it was only the two-point shot that actually kept the Lightning in it. And obviously, the Lightning worked into the game, and I mean, a 24-6 final quarter. That's the Lightning's work. That's not Firebirds being at their best. That's Lightning shutting them down completely. So that obviously needs to be taken into consideration. But Lightning wouldn't have been in a position to take a lead that big if it hadn't been for that 2-point shot. So it's a little bit frustrating seeing that, and hopefully we don't see as many blowouts this season. Obviously, this was just the first game, and as the round went on, the margins closed a little bit. But especially if this ends up being like the top team and the bottom team of the season, that's a huge, huge margin.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, as you've both said, the Firebirds had a lot to hang their hat on after that result. The second game of the round was the Thunderbirds up against the Fever, and it was the Fever able to get the job done, 74-62. Now, 62 points, it would be enough for the Thunderbirds to win every other match in round one, but they come up against a Fever side who were able to score really heavily and had that benefit of Janiel Fowler. So a great result for the Fever, but probably a little bit disappointing for the Thunderbirds.
I think everyone's underestimated the Fever this season, and I'll be the first to say that I definitely did. But they seem to have worked out their combinations a little bit more this season, a little bit more confidence in their combinations. And you could really see their confidence in the young players as well. And same with the Thunderbirds. Neither side was afraid to put out their young players on court. And I thought that was just fantastic. But, I mean, you look at some of those players who stood up. I mean, I've been going on about it all week. Maisie Nankervell had a really, really good game for the Thunderbirds. Sunday Ayang played half a game out in goal defence for Fever, and she stood up really well. You look at Sam Gooden. She didn't shoot very well from short range, but shot, I think it was 10 goals or something from the two-point range. So, or maybe it was nine.
Regardless, nine from 10, I think she ended up getting.
Yeah, regardless, you look at those numbers and you're like, yes, these players can actually step up and they should be able to have the opportunity more frequently to step up. So I thought this game was fantastic just because it was such a high-scoring game and so many young players were out there just playing their trade, doing what they do best.
I was quite interested in the fact, like you just touched on there, Soph, the fact that it was such a high-scoring game given the defensive prowess of both teams. This is kind of what really shocked me, is the fact that we know, for example, Courtney Bruce is such a strong, strong defensive player. She's always on the hunt, always looking for ball for the Fever. And then up the other end, you had Shamira Sterling, and she's always, you know, quite the tenacious defender. I was kind of shocked that they... For me, it was especially Sterling was well and truly outplayed by Fowler, and I think that's just a testament to the Fever's midcourt and the strength of Fowler. But really, for both teams to be so heavily dictated by attack was the surprising element. What did you think, Jared?
Yeah, I thought it was a really hard-fought contest, and I think you make a good point. Both these teams have such strong defensive units and stars up that end. So I think it was... interesting to see that it was so high scoring, but I think the Fever were able to get their midcourt going and really able to get a lot of ball into Fowler in good positions, and she was able to shoot as well as she's ever shot. So a great result for the Fever there to get a win on the board first up. The third game of round one was the closest game of the round, and it was the Swifts defeating the Giants 63-61. Now, this one was a really close matchup, but it was the third quarter, the premiership quarter from the Swifts that really set them apart and sent them on their way to a good victory first up.
The Swifts were so good in this one. And I think even though they only won that one quarter, they were really consistent. Whereas I felt like the Giants came out really strong, but did not finish the same way. And obviously, that's just down to my own opinion and obviously... the game had its own issues. I mean, I thought personally that this game in particular really exposed the messiness that the two-point shot brings to the game. This game was very... It wasn't undisciplined, but it had its real issues. Both teams were trying to score super shots, but were bunching at the top of the circle, so they weren't able to get the ball in. It was that kind of thing where it created a lot more crowding than I think we've seen in other games. And... the closeness of the contest meant that it was forced to be that way. The teams had to go for those two-point shots to take the lead. And obviously the Swifts got away with it in the end just by holding onto the ball basically for the last minute because they knew that if the Giants got it up their end, they didn't have to score two shots. They had to score just one two-pointer. And I think that's going to be something we see a lot of this season. The other thing that was really noticeable in this game was the penalties were called in the two-shot zone, then there'd be a deliberate penalty under the post to try and force the shot to be taken under the post instead. And there's all those kind of, I don't want to say dirty tactical things, but it is kind of dirty, that kind of thing. We're going to see a whole load of those things crop up. And we, like, at the end of the day, we can't afford for that to happen in this sport.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you there, Soph. I think that this game kind of displayed the tactics behind the two-point shot, and I think we'll touch on that more as the podcast goes on. But for me, I think this is a really ominous sign for teams because the Giants pulled out this in round one against the reigning premiers. Imagine how much better they can go as the season builds. Clearly, there's still connections. And as we said before, practice matches, there hasn't been many opportunities. So for them to really rattle the Swifts and kind of, I thought they had a lot of momentum throughout the game and they forced the Swifts into uncharacteristic errors. And that's something we haven't seen often. So I think that that was a really interesting part in the fact that the Giants were kind of able to manipulate the way the Swifts play and bring them to their level and then control the flow from there. And I think you could see that when, for example, Maddie Proud came onto the court, while it was exciting and the experience of her paid dividends, they almost didn't know how to interact with her, the Swifts' attack end. But once Haythorne Thwaite came on, it was a calming presence. So I think that's something that the Swifts will also be hoping to work on and just, you know, fine-tune those nitty-gritty new connections.
Yeah, definitely. The final game of round one was the Vixens up against the Magpies, and the Vixens getting the win 63-52. This one was a really even contest for three quarters, but then the Vixens were able to blow the Magpies out in the last term, 18-9. An impressive performance from the Vixens.
I think it's kind of the same case of the Firebirds v Lightning type of thing. They had the ability and the star power to run with the Vixens, or the Magpies had the ability and star power to run with the Vixens for the first three, and then it's that experience and tried and tested combinations that ultimately shines through for the Vixens. Clearly, they have one of the strongest teams across the court. You look down at it and you go, okay, where on earth are the issues? And it's, for me, it's really hard to think of any fault in their game plan or structurally, because they have such a wealth of options. But then you look at the Magpies, and I was actually really excited to see that all of these young players just, you know what, coming out there and giving it a red hot go, and that's all you can really ask for. We know that they have, you know, lost Kim Ravalli and April Branley, who debuted for the Giants on the weekend. You've got Ash Braz out with a knee injury. You've got Nat Medhurst as well, missing from the squad. I think for the Magpies, this is really going to be an interesting season, and full credit for them for sticking with the Vixens for the first three. But in the end, you just can't compete with the class of the Vixens outfit.
See, for me in this one, I don't think it was necessarily the class of the Vixens. I felt like the Vixens were off their game almost the same way as the Swifts were. Vixens won three of the quarters, but they didn't look like it. They didn't look like the confident team that we were seeing towards the back end of last year. And obviously, like we've said, they didn't play practice games. Same with Magpies, same with majority of the teams. So that's always bound to happen. I think the real game changer in here for me was Kate Eddy. And I know I keep going on about it. I've said it a lot on social media over the last few days. But Kate Eddy, that change from wing defense to goal defense in the last quarter, that's the versatility the Vixens have needed for a long time. Because it actually allowed Joe Weston to go out and stop the ball from getting into the circle, because Maddie Brown and Kelsey Brown were killing it putting ball into the circle. And that was the only reason why Emma Ride was able to get so much to the post, because the ball into her was pinpoint perfection. And so having Joe Weston's hands over the ball outside the circle limited that option, gave Kate Eddy the run to goal defense and actually to be able to intercept that ball that Joe Weston was kind of blocking. So I thought that was the real game changer for the Vixens. And I really do feel like that's a lot of the reason why they won in this game. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what else they can pull out.
Yeah, exactly. And that versatility will only become more valuable as the season does go on for the Vixens. So an impressive performance, a first up and an 11-point win in round one. That's it for the wrap of round one. We're going to go into some more of the nitty-gritty details now. Obviously, some of the big talking points going into the 2020 season have been the rule changes. And we're going to touch on two of them here. The first one being the major one and the most talked about rule, I think the most talk about rule change in netball history, the super shot. And we didn't really know how teams were going to adapt to the super shot being brought in, but we did see some teams, and most notably the Swifts, basically saying that they weren't going to that they weren't really going to acknowledge the super shot. They were just going to try and play how they normally would. That seemed to be overturned pretty quickly as they tried to get up a few super shots. But a lot of teams really trying to take advantage of those two-pointers. How did you guys see the rule being implemented in round one?
as I already said before, I feel like it added a new messiness to the game, and especially in the close games, we're going to see that really, really obviously. Overall, in the first game, I definitely saw how it could add to the excitement, especially in the first half where the Lightning were losing and getting close to the Firebirds. But then when you factor in that they never would have been able to win, I don't think, if they hadn't have had those two goals throughout the game. I don't really agree with that. I don't think the Lightning... It's not that I don't think they deserved the win, because certainly that second half deserved a victory because they were that good. But at the end of the day, they were in... They didn't play the game for the rest of the game. They played... The first half was pretty average from the Lightning, and they never would have been that close. And I feel like I'm just repeating myself here, but...
It's all right. I'll help you out, because we were kind of on a similar wavelength in the fact that, for me, I think it creates an unprecedented momentum shift. It gives teams that don't actually have control but have that one player that can potentially shoot from range, she can then completely change the course of a game. And while I understand that, for example, an intercept can do that, or, you know, a couple of goals strung together can do that, I just think for me personally, it's not enhancing the game. It's kind of giving teams that don't have that one player that can shoot from range, can put them at disadvantage. And that for me is not fair, because you're then straying away from the game of netball. And my second point being that it kind of creates a false sense of security for teams, or a false reality, in the terms that teams can be 10 goals down and go, oh, well, I just have to score 5 super shots. While that's well and good at this SSN level, when it comes to international performances, that mentality has to change. And it's not easy to change mentality when you've been playing a 13, 14 game round season. And, you know, it creates a whole nother level of intricacies and confusion. Don't get me wrong, I thought it was great to see some of these players backing themselves from range, and it definitely created more moment or movement inside the goal circle and something different for defenders to look at. But at the same time, for me, I found it just confusing to watch. And the fact that, in what world would you ever see a goal shooter pass the ball out from directly under the post to a goal attack just inside the circle edge? Like, yeah, I don't know. Jared, I know you're a fan of this. You're going to shut us both down and go, nah, I love it.
No, I don't think so. I think the point I think I'm about to make is both a positive and negative for the super shot. I think you speak about how the shots can change the momentum and give teams an extra bit of run and an extra bit of momentum going into halftime, as you saw the Lightning. I think overall, looking at the stats, the teams that made the most goals overall, whether they were one goal or two goal shots, won the games. Like, you look at the Lightning, they won by 18 points in the end. They made 13 more shots than the Firebirds. So in a normal game, they would have still won by 13 goals. It's a good thing that it's not directly affecting results.
Yes.
But at the same time, you look at it, the same thing, you look at it and you say, well, if it's not going to change a game and a team's not going to win just based on the super shot, then why is it needed? Like,
yep, I 100% agree with you there.
If one team is making more shots than the other, they win the game. And that's how netball's always been.
The thing that I thought kind of wrapped it up perfectly over the weekend was what Joe Harden said at halftime. When asked about the super shot, obviously she's a long bomb specialist. She should love it, at the end of the day, she's the one who's going to benefit from it. And she said she personally doesn't like it, but they're going to have to use it. They don't have a choice, because if you don't use the super shot, you're not going to win the game, unless you have a pre-organized idea with the other team that you're playing that you're just not going to do it. That's not going to happen. It's not a tactical decision. Exactly. And so. Yeah, I thought that was – it's a smart way to go about it, as in, like, we're not going to deliberately use it. We're not going to try win games off it, but we're not going to ignore it. And I think that's something that needs to be taken into consideration. players still don't like it, but they have to use it, and that it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that's what we saw with the point I made earlier. The Swifts basically came out and said midweek that they would disregard it and they wouldn't take super shots. They would just play normally. If they get a super shot, it's all well and good, but they're not going to look for it. But I think we saw straight away the first quarter, the Giants were taking advantage really quickly.
Yeah.
And the Swifts were falling behind at a kind of rapid rate. And straight away, they kind of changed their tactic and said, oh, okay, maybe we're going to have to put up a few of these super shots. And they continued that throughout the match because it just didn't seem like they were going to be able to keep up with the Giants if they didn't go along with them. So,
which is frustrating because it means that teams actually have to change their own tactics. I mean, the Swifts had a tried and true tactic last season. Clean hands, clean ball, getting those turnovers, limiting shots at goal. They had their way of playing, and it's completely thrown a spanner in the works for that team. Obviously, it has for every team, like, not going to lie. But, the Swifts aren't a team known for going for a whole load of long bombs. I mean, obviously, Helen Housby does have the capacity to, but they're always treasuring ball. And obviously, the further you go out from goal, unless you're Joe Harton, the further you go out from the goal, the less chance you have of going in.
But then
Just by having that inaccuracy, that already throws away the Swifts' idea of play, which is really, really clean. But, yeah, go ahead.
Well, then you look at the teams like the Fever and the Magpies, who have a traditional tall holding shooter. They are teams that, while the Fever won on the weekend, you know, full kudos to them, it then kind of puts pressure on the goal attack or the goal shooter to change up their game plan. And I think we saw multiple times that throughout the games that the mid-quarters actually didn't know where to feed to because they weren't sure if players were going to go for the super shot. So they're like hitting the circle edge, they're doing all of this work, and then they're hitting circle edge, delivering the ball into the shooter, and they're going, oh, actually, I'm not going to shoot from here. I'm going to shoot from two-point range. So then they're having to rework the whole system. And I think that's kind of something that people aren't really used to seeing, and I, for one, found it really frustrating to watch because I was like, why aren't you just going for the goal? And it's like, oh, because it's the super shot and people want to, or teams want to make sure they take full advantage of it. And it's like, but in netball, it is about just getting, you know, getting goals, building that pressure, doing this, doing that. And the fact that they're kind of then going away from the normal game plan that maybe their own individual game plan or just netball as a whole, I think for me, it was just a really frustrating introduction, but at the same time, I can see the benefits of it in creating that atmosphere. But
I felt like the Swifts utilized it very well because a lot of the teams were really needing that super shot and then kind of fading out through the rest of the quarter. Whereas I felt the Swifts were one of the teams that actually really made use of being, obviously it was a really, really tight match between the Giants and Swifts. But I felt like the Swifts, I mean, I already said it during our little wrap, I felt like the Swifts had a lot of the momentum. They just didn't have the movement necessarily going. So I felt like the Swifts were very smart with their play because they didn't rely on the super shot in those 5 minutes. They got their lead back in the first 10 minutes of each quarter. They were really, really close to the Giants in all those patches. And it was only those 5 minutes at the end of each quarter that the Giants would really leap ahead or leap closer, I guess. So I felt like the Swifts are probably using it the best way at the moment, only as a last resort. Obviously, it's that kind of mentality of if you're caught with the ball there and you can't get the ball anywhere else, obviously go for it. But they're not deliberately trying to get the ball in that zone. And I think that will really work in their favour by the end of the season just from the cleanliness of how that ball use works.
Yeah, I think there are definitely positives and negatives to it, and we're just gonna. I think I stopped the conversation here because I think we can talk about it all day, and it's going to be a major talking point throughout the entire season. And I think people's opinions are going to stay the same. I think if you like it, you're going to like it all season. If you didn't like it going in, I don't think anything's going to change your mind. So, it's just
sounds about right.
You have to get on with it, and the players are getting on with it. So. We just have to accept that it's the rule for 2020 and just see how teams do use it. The other new rule for the 2020 season is the rolling subs. And I think this one was used to perfection. I think it was great to see fresh legs coming on continuously throughout quarters, a lot of young players coming in and getting a shot, even if it was just for 3 or 4 minutes. I think this is an absolute perfect rule for netball.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Jared. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great to just kind of keep the flow of the game, because we know so many times you're expecting a timeout. You can kind of sense it. Okay, timeout, quick, this person's not playing well, sub this one on. This just allowed the game to flow at such a free momentum, and I thought that was really good to watch. For me, sometimes I did get a little bit confused. I couldn't keep up with who was coming on, who was coming off, and so for that element, I was a little bit like, okay, this is going to take me some time to get used to. But at the same time, I was like, hell yeah, really love the fact that all these young players are getting to come onto court. Like you said, whether it be a couple minutes here and there, it just gave the game a really exciting atmosphere and gave the players a chance to really prove their worth and show why they why they're on a Suncorp Super Netball list and the potential that there is and the depth that Australian netball does have. I know in the past we've been really critical, saying we have so many internationals and there's a lot of Aussies that are taking a back seat, but I think this season we're finally going to be able to get access to some of these really young up and coming players, and for me that's really exciting.
Yeah, I 100% agree. This is one of those rules where I really like it coming into SSN, but it should not come in grassroots netball. I was kind of hesitant about it coming in at A&L level last year, but I think it's smart because it does prep those players coming up into SSN. Overall, I thought it worked really, really well. And I know that a lot of people over the off season were a little bit unsure about it. Obviously, having the Super Shot come in, it pushes it to the back burner a little bit, but I thought it was really, really well utilized this round, and I am so excited to see how it continues to play through. I mean, we saw so many young, talented players get court time, and those players probably ended up getting more court time than they would have if they had just been playing a regular game, just because they were able to play out more than 5 minutes, and then the coach kind of had that security of, oh, you know what, I can take them off later if they're not playing well, and I can just rotate that easily. It's not like you have to call time or call a fake injury timeout, anything like that. And I think it just gave those players a little bit more freedom going, you know what, I have to play the best I've ever played to stay on court. And a lot of them did. And that was full credit to those players and those teams. And regardless of the score lines, you were seeing those players get out on court. I mean, I know we talk about it all the time. The Vixens are so rigid in their positions. And we saw Jackie Newton take the court in defence and everything. And that's a real testament to her and her development. She's rarely gotten court time in the past because of the defensive prowess and the confidence the Vixens have in their defence. And for her to get some court time there, that's a big confidence booster. Same with all the other players that took the court for the round. I thought it was just great.
Yeah, I think I haven't seen any negative views towards the rolling subs rule. I think it's perfect, and I think it was implemented well by coaches across the competition. And we'll move on to our next segment now, and it directly is affected by the rolling subs, the debutants from in round one. And I think I've got it correct. I had a look through the team list, and I think I counted it right. I think there were 11 players who made their Suncorp Super Netball debut in round one. I think that's an extraordinary number. And Taylor, as you said a little bit earlier, we've had that debate in the last year or so of the depth of teams, and the depth of Australian netball has really suffered because there's a lot of internationals playing over in this competition. But to see 11 players take the court for the first time in Suncorp Super Netball is great for that development of Australian netball.
And it wasn't just the fact that they took the court, it's the fact that they absolutely dominated and that they had an influence at the post. It's easy, not that it's easy, not the right words, but what I'm trying to say is that it's easy to come onto the court and, you know, just put the bib on. It's another thing to have an influence and have some type of say in the way that the game is being played. And I think you could see that across the round. You know, clearly Georgie Horgis was huge for Adelaide. She came on and really asserted herself in that goal attack position. She showcased her speed and she was just exciting to watch. And then you had the likes, clearly, Naya Allen for Collingwood. She only got a couple of minutes, but still just the confidence on of her to go for that super shot in her first game was just so exciting. Molly Jovic as well. There's so many debutantes, and for me, that's really what this season should be about. It's kind of looking at, we've had such an unprecedented start to the year, or to the netball year, I should say. And now it's more about, okay, we know that everything is looking different. We've got to kind of just roll with the flow, or go with the flow with things. And having these young players come on court is exactly what the Suncorp Super Netball needs.
I love that the Firebirds fan in the room forgot about Tipper Dwan.
Didn't she debut ages ago?
No, because she
oh my gosh, her debut. That's why I didn't bring it up.
Because she she technically made her debut in the preseason, so it wasn't a real debut.
Okay, from memory. Well, can I go back and talk about Tipper? Because she amazing. Oh,
she was so good. She was really impressive. She came out with confidence from the get-go, and I think in the lead-up to to the round, I think everyone was kind of questioning who would get that starting goal attack position. Obviously, we know that Aitken is a goal shooter. You look at Ina Marie Venter, we were kind of tossing up whether she'd be in there because she practiced a lot as a goal attack last year with the Vixens. So then to see Tipper Dwan get the start, and not only get the start, but actually like kill it in the beginning. She was so good, and the smile on Gretel Bretta's face during that super shot period where Tipper Dwan just came out absolutely flying. It was fantastic to see. And I mean, everyone wants to see the Firebirds get a little bit of joy back in their lives after last season. And Tipper was so good. I think all of the debutantes were really, really good though. It wasn't like they were put on court and then taken off again straight away. I mean, we've seen it with the ANZ where players will be on court for maybe 5 minutes and then be taken off because they haven't had much of an impact. 5 minutes is nothing. You can't do anything in 5 minutes. So the fact that so many debutantes not only got on the court, but were also on for like a suitable period of time for them to actually put their best foot forward and prove that they deserved their spot on the court, I thought it was so exciting to see.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of young guns getting a go in round one of the 2020 season. And now we are very excited to welcome to the Centre Pass podcast, Georgie Horges from the Adelaide Thunderbirds. Georgie, thank you for joining us here on the Centre Pass podcast, and congratulations on making your Suncorp Super Netball debut on the weekend.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you guys.
And I think, first of all, it's been a long off season, and we've been waiting a long time for the Super Netball season to start. How exciting was it for you to finally begin the season and get on the court?
Yeah, it was definitely so exciting. Like, even just being on the bench, I was just super keen to get out there, and the girls are so excited. So, yeah, it was really good to just play netball again. Yeah.
So how was the extended pre-season? Did that help kind of cement some connections across the court?
Yeah, definitely. It was quite challenging at the start because we didn't have the contact training, but lately we've had lots of contact training and lots of match play, so that's been really helpful, and also lots of fitness stuff, so everyone's looking really fit and strong at the moment, so that's good, yeah.
And for those kind of watching you for the first time, what has your netball journey been like? How long did it take you, or how is it now being a part of the Thunderbirds lineup?
It's a bit surreal because I come from Kangaroo Island, so I started netball over there when I was about 5. And so I've travelled up to Adelaide every weekend probably around 5 years, probably. So 4-hour drives on the boat as well. And then a couple of years ago, I moved up to Adelaide, and then was lucky enough last year to do a bit of training with the Thunderbirds, and then this year lucky enough to be a training partner.
It's obviously a major commitment. Did you expect to kind of come in this early and make your debut as early as you have, or were you just kind of thinking this season would just be about developing and just that? Or did you expect to get onto the court so early?
Yeah, to be honest, I definitely didn't expect to play at all. Like, being a training partner, you sort of, you almost feel like an extra number, but this year there's like 12 in the squad, so everyone can get the opportunity to be on court. So you just got to take every opportunity you can. So yeah, definitely didn't expect to be on the court so early.
And talking about taking opportunities on the court, obviously the super shots come in this season, and you took a few long bombs yourself on the weekend. What do you think of the new rule?
It's a bit exciting. It's a bit different. It takes the sort of the taller shooters out of the game a bit, I guess. So I don't know really. It's exciting, but it will definitely change the game. And every team will take it differently. So it's just good to see how every other team will go about it, and it can definitely change the game. Yeah.
And for you personally, Georgie, what are some of your goals that you're really hoping to achieve this season?
Not too sure. Just to hopefully just get some game time, and just for the T-Birds to have a good season. It's a really good bunch of girls, so just having a good season together, playing some football.
Is there anything that you're hoping to improve on personally?
Probably just my leadership. I'm quite a quiet person, so just my leadership on court, and because I'm so young, but still having that voice in the team, and being confident as well.
And obviously it is such a young team in Adelaide, but you do have some big international names in the squad. What's it like playing with them, training and learning off them? For example, Lanise Pocketer in the shooting circle. What's it been like playing with those sorts of players?
Yeah, it's very surreal that you train with them every day, but they're such nice people and so easy to get along with. So it's been really helpful having those guys with all the experience just to pass on their knowledge. So it's been awesome.
Yeah, and talking about players with experience, you took on Courtney Bruce in the goal circle as well on the weekend. What was it like kind of coming up against one of those really core players from the Diamonds?
That's a bit surreal as well, I guess. So it's very physical. It was very physical in the circle. But just sort of taking it out of your mind and just playing your own game is really important. But after the game, when you realise sort of you're playing those players, it feels pretty crazy, I guess, yeah.
And is there anything, any player in particular that you've kind of always looked up to?
Probably the shorter goalies, so like Nat Medhurst, Steph Wood, because I'm really short myself. Just having the confidence to still be a goal attack but not have that height as well. And they're also sort of smart players, so I try and sort of look at their game and see if I can learn some stuff from them, yeah.
And just maybe a final one, you spoke about going up against Courtney Bruce on the weekend, but in training you've been going up against Shamara Sterling, who's been one of the revelations of the Super Netball competition over the last year. How is she to come up against in training, and are you kind of in awe of what she does on the court?
Yeah, she's a freak. I don't know how she gets all the balls she does. She's crazy, so it's good that we can have that practice on her every week. So when it comes up to game day, we know that we've had probably the best defenders playing against all week. So, yeah, it's good to have that practice.
Well, I think that's all we have time for on the Centre Pass podcast. Thank you, Georgie, once again for joining us, and best of luck for the rest of the 2020 season.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Once again, thank you to Georgie Horgis for joining us on the Centre Pass podcast. We wish her all the best for the rest of the 2020 Suncorp Super Netball season. Just before we do move on, as well as the 11 debutants to Suncorp Super Netball, we also saw, I think, six players playing their first match for a new club, and some really impressive names. Obviously, the biggest news out of the week was April Branley joining the Giants. Obviously, she's had a baby in the off-season, and with the length of the off-season has been able to train back up and get back onto the Suncorp Super Netball court. While it would be disappointing for Collingwood fans to not see her in the black and white, a great job for her and a great job for the Giants to get her an experienced body, and will really help them later on in the season. Kate Eddy was also the other one who was super impressive for the Vixens. And Lanise Pocketer for the Thunderbirds did a great job in the shooting circle. There's some great players who have moved to new clubs in the 2020 season. What did you guys think of their performances in round one?
I think for me, when you look at the fact that Pocketer was such a strong holding shooter and she kind of really took control for that Adelaide Thunderbirds lineup, that's going to be a really exciting prospect, especially when especially when Sasha Glasgow returns, I think easily they'll push Glasgow out into goal attack. And if those two can combine in the future, they're definitely going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I was really excited to see some of those new names kind of joined the fray. Like I already said, Kate Eddy was so awesome in this first game for the Vixens, so I can't wait to see what she does next.
Yeah, so some great names there, and hopefully all the best for their 2020 seasons. Moving on now, we obviously spoke about it a little bit earlier, but the return of a few injured stars to their lineups for round one, and headlined by the Brown sisters, also Maddie Proud, the captain, well, she was the captain basically until she got injured, of the Swifts, and Mahalia Cassidy doing a great job for the Firebirds. It was great to see these players back out on court. I know we did speak about it earlier, so we will go through it quickly, but great to see those four players back out and doing a great job for their sides.
Mahalia Cassidy was the one that I was really impressed by. She came up against Laura Langman in her first time back out on the court in, what, who knows, I don't know, 12 months, I don't know. But she was really, really impressive. She just hunted that ball, and she was on the ground a few times, and that was just, like, insane to see that she just bounced straight up back up again. She had no fear. She had no worry. She had confidence, full confidence in her ability to run out the game, and she didn't play the entire game. She had a bit of an ankle niggle, but she was awesome. I was so excited to see her back.
And there are a few injured players or players that missed round one for various reasons. Shimona Nelson was obviously the shock of that bunch. She obviously, there was news that came out basically just before round one had started that she had possibly been in contact with someone who had been diagnosed with COVID-19. So she was isolating and sat out round one, and we think we're getting her back for round two, which is a good sign for the Magpies, although Emma Ride did do a good job in the circle. Maddie Turner, a big loss for the Swifts. I think she's out for about 4 weeks. I think it was it a knee injury that
yeah,
she...
Yeah, it's ankle injury.
Yeah, so an ankle injury there, and a big loss for the Swifts, but Lauren Moore doing a great job in her place. Gemma Maimai, also the other one. I don't think we have actually got news on why she missed round one.
I think
one,
it was a calf strain or something like that. They said it was some type of muscular strain or something like that. So I don't imagine she'll be out for too long.
Yeah, definitely. And that'd be one that the Firebirds will be hoping to get back really quickly, because I think she finished off the 2019 season really well, and she was looking to really explode in 2020 and have a great year for that Firebirds side. Wrap up our Suncorp Super Netball coverage with our team of the week for round one. I'm going to kick it off in defense, and we've got in goalkeeper, we've got Pumza Mwaini. I think was consistent for the entire match, and obviously her connection with Carla Pretorius has been well noted over the last 12 months. So a great job once again for her up against the Firebirds, doing a great job. In goal defense, we've got Lauren Moore. I did mention her just a couple of moments ago. An awesome job in place of Maddie Turner. 5 deflections, 6 intercepts in, I think it might have been her first full game in Suncorp Super Netball. Did a great job playing on Joe Harton. Harton did have a good match, but Moore was just outstanding. Sophie, you're going to take us through the midcourt.
Yeah, I've got the midcourt. So two of these choices were ones that I had written down for my team, so I was very happy with that. So in wing defence, pretty unsurprisingly, it probably could have gone between two players, but
it definitely should have gone to someone else. But no, pretend like I don't exist.
No, so we went with Amy Parmenter, much to Taylor's dismay. She was really hoping for Gabby Simpson, but we overruled her because Parmy had a really, really, really great game. I think she got something like 7 intercepts or something ridiculous like that. Really, really consistent game. Ran Manny Proud off the court in a patch. Out in centre, we have Kate Maloney. Again, Taylor doesn't approve, but Kate Maloney, again, one of those really, really consistent names, and is just an absolute workhorse through the centre of the court, both defensively and in attack. And in wing attack, we've got Verity Charles, and this was the one that I had Liz Watson in for. So Verity Charles, I'm happy for her to be there. She did a really good job, and her feeds were pretty pinpoint accurate into Janelle Fowler. So Taylor, take it away in attack.
Well, I'm the lucky one. The defender gets the attack. That's funny in itself. So I don't think it's really any surprise. Joe Harton was an absolute dynamite in attack for the Giants. She ended up scoring 19 goals from 23 attempts. She was just so clever with ball in hand, and I think while she was up against Moore, the two had such a strong battle that they kind of both deserved to be in the team. And then, unsurprisingly, in goal shooter, Jeneil Fowler, I mean, is there anything she can't do? She was just phenomenal throughout the entire game. She just completely dominated and was so exciting to watch. I mean, you just can't compete with someone that's going 52 goals from 55 attempts. That's just ridiculous numbers. So that's pretty much our team. Shall we move to the bench and go through the bench?
Yeah, I'll kick things off on the bench. We'll go through the whole bench. Kim Jenner was absolutely outstanding for the Firebirds. Obviously, a tough match in the end, but she did an awesome job back there for the Firebirds. Our midcourt bench is, our midcourt sub is Kate Eddy. I think there are a few options that could have gone here. I know, Taylor, you pushed half of Gabby Simpson. Sophie, you pushed half of Liz Watson. But I think Kate Eddy was just phenomenal in her Vixens debut, and we did speak about her earlier. Just did an awesome job, and just the versatility that she does bring to the Vixens is just so valuable.
In my defence, I had both Kate Eddy and Liz Watson on my original team, so yeah, I was happy for either of them to take the bench in attack.
Yeah, I think we are all in agreement that Eddy does deserve the spot, but there were just a handful of mid-quarters that could have taken this spot. Finally, our attacking sub was Lettice Pocketta. As we did speak about a bit earlier, another one playing her first game for a new club and shooting 35 of 37 in her debut, really holding down that goal shooter position for the Thunderbirds. And I think she's incredibly valuable for them in 2020. That is our team of the week. Do let us know on Twitter at CentrePassPod if you agree who you think should have made the team. But that is it for Suncorp Super Netball for round one. We are going to move on quickly and just finally to the ANZ Premiership round eight on the weekend for 2020. And a really surprising result. We're not going to go through every game one by one. We're going to do a whole overview. The big result was the Mystics getting the win over the Pulse, handing them their first loss of 2020.
I watched this game and it was so good. The Mystics came from behind in the last quarter and absolutely blew the Pulse away in front of a Pulse home crowd. And it was just so good to see. I mean, I said it again and again, underdogs all the way. You got to have the underdogs win a game. And I think the Mystics really proved that they're top two worthy with this performance. It's just about the consistency now for them.
Yeah, I think an awesome result. And I think as much as we would love to see a team go undefeated through a whole season, I think for them internally, you always kind of want to lose a game just to kind of bring you back down to earth and just get a reality check just before finals. We still think they'll win it all, but a great job from the Mystics there. A couple of other results. The Tactics got two wins. The Magic got a really impressive win last night against the Southern Steel.
I'll touch on that because I watched that game and the emotions after the game were just, it was so pure. Sam Winders, the captain, had been trying her absolute darndest the entire game, and for her to actually kind of tear up at the end of the game, you could see just how much it meant. We've spoken about
Abigail Latu Meafau too was also crying at the end. She took I think it was the winning shot.
Yeah, it was the winning goal.
It was so good.
We've said it time and time again, the Magic have been so close yet so far. So for them finally to get a win, just to see the pure elation on all of their faces was one of the most purest things you could ever ask for. It was just great.
Yeah, awesome to see them get a result in round eight. There are two more rounds of ANZ Premiership before finals, and still some ladder places can change. So there's still a lot on the line for these teams in the final 2 weeks of the season. That is all we have time for here on the Centre Pass podcast for this week. Do go follow us at Centre Pass Pod on Twitter, and do go to netball.draftcentral.com for all your Suncorp Super Netball and World Netball news and reviews. And we will speak to you next week.